Bank bonuses under the microscope.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Stacey Vanek Smith. Now the global perspective, when we take a look at what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world. There's a new plan in the news this morning that would force banks to reveal how big banker bonuses are and why. Our own Stephen Beard joins us live to talk about this. Good morning, Stephen.
Hello, Stacey.
Stephen, we've heard all sorts of plans to rein in bank bonuses. Where's this one coming from?
Well, yes, that's right. We've had British and European regulations. This plan is part of the so-called Basel III set of planned banking regulations. If adopted, these will affect all of the big banking countries that have signed up to it, including the US.
What's different about this approach?
Well, this aims to use disclosure to bring some discipline to the payment of bonuses. So it'll mean that banks have to name which bankers are getting how much and what they've done to earn it. So this isn't bureaucrats restricting bonuses. This leaves it to the market, to the bank's shareholders, for example, to judge whether the bonuses are reasonable. And it leaves it to the markets generally to judge which banks have the most prudent bonus policies.
Will that disclosure, is the thought that that disclosure would cut the size of the big bonuses bankers are getting?
Not according to a British banking expert, Ralph Silver, that I've been talking to. He thinks it may now be easier for the top performing investment bankers to collect big bonuses.
If you actually see in a report card that a banker brought in $100 million and he gets a $5 million bonus, all of a sudden, this seems like it's reasonable, the amount of money. In other words, if you sell more shoes in a shoe store and you make more money because you're on commission, that's okay.
He says the bankers who aren't bringing in more business and those who are actually losing money will suffer. They'll probably lose their bonuses under this plan.
Stephen Beard in London. Thanks, Stephen.
Okay, Stacey.
It was a very Merry Christmas for retailers. Apparently, U.S. consumers are getting more confident. The question is, why? Mitchell Hartman takes a look.
With unemployment near 10% and housing still in a deep slump, consumer confidence remains at historically low levels compared to past recessions, but it has been creeping up for five straight months. Chris Christopher is an economist with IHS Global Insight. He expects the Conference Board's index to keep rising.
And now that things are getting slightly better, not so much on the housing market, but on the stock market, incomes are going up. There's some hiring happening here and there. People are starting to spend more, and that pent-up demand is being unleashed.
That's reflected in retail sales figures trickling out from the holiday shopping season. A survey from MasterCard finds consumers spent 5.5% more this year than last. And consumer spending is likely to keep rising in the new year. That tax cut compromise from Washington will reduce the payroll tax by 2%, adding to people's paychecks. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
The post-holiday humdrums seem to have hit the markets. Asian markets are mixed. Europe mostly up. London's FTSE is up 0.2%. U.S. markets were mixed yesterday. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 0.1% to close at 11,555. If you happen to be channel surfing over the weekend, you might have caught some of those classic holiday movies they like to play over and over again, like It's a Wonderful Life and that kids' movie, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer. You know, the one narrated by Burl Ives as Sam the Snowman?
Silver and gold. Silver and gold.
Everyone. Turns out Sam was giving some pretty decent investment advice. Commodities like silver and gold outperformed stocks and bonds in 2010. Standard & Poor's Commodities Index jumped 20% this year. That's more than double the 9% gain stocks saw.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by the all-new Chevrolet Volt, available soon in select markets. Details at ChevyVolt.com. The all-new Chevrolet Volt. It's more car than electric.
If you've been on your smartphone lately, let's say trying to rebook plane tickets, you've been using rare earth metals. Those are obscure materials used in high-tech devices. China controls 97% of global supplies, and they're cutting exports way back. So Estonia is stepping in to pick up the slack. Christopher Worth has more.
Rare earths are not so rare. There are other sources of them outside China, like Australia in the U.S. But Stuart Burns, who tracks metals markets for the website Metal Miner, says it's not just about mining raw rare earths. It's also what you do once you get them out of the ground.
It's refining it into oxides and metals that can be used.
With China cutting exports, the lack of refining facilities in other parts of the world is causing much concern. And it's why this factory for refining rare earths in northeast Estonia, one of the few remaining outside China, could have a bright future, not just a long history.
It's been working like this for almost 40 years.
David O'Brock is the CEO of Silmet, the company that owns and operates the plant, and he's showing me around.
Please watch your head here.
This facility was originally built under Stalin to enrich uranium at the start of the Cold War. Today, workers are instead busy churning out around 2 to 3% of the world's supply of processed rare earths, about 3,000 tons a year, although O'Brock would like to produce more.
Demand for our products has increased a lot.
About 10 years ago, China began flooding the market with its own cheap rare earth supplies. As prices dropped, other refineries folded.
It was completely the best way to lose money at that time.
Now, China has turned off the spigot, and rare earth prices have jumped. Here at Silmet, the price fetched for the rare earth neodymium used in products like cell phones has gone from $15 a kilogram to around $85 over the past year. O'Brock says there's just one problem.
Our bottleneck has always been the raw material, not being able to get enough as what our market needs, and it continues to be today.
But with prices rising, O'Brock says he's hopeful new mines currently getting underway in the U.S. and elsewhere will soon step in to meet the booming demand. In Estonia, I'm Christopher Wirth for Marketplace.
And finally, a new study from Northwestern University links your number of Facebook friends to the size of your brain. The study found the more Facebook friends you have, the bigger your amygdala tends to be. That's the part of your brain that controls how social you are and apparently how many cows you can feed in Farmville. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith, and this is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
Economists often tackle questions that to most of us seem repugnant.
Would I rather have money to send the grandchildren to college, or would I rather keep my mother, who's in a coma, alive for another 2 weeks?
I'm Bob Moon, the latest in our Freakonomics series, next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.